Mr. Apocalypse is coming. He's rising into view just like the sun. He's bringing living truth and bringing freedom. And a wake-up call designed for everyone. Might be the very thing you've been longing for, or it might be the very last thing on your mind. It could be something that you sent on ahead of you, or it could be something you left behind.
It is time for a weekly visit from our favorite social, political, and metaphysical commentator, Les Visible. He writes several blogs right around the globe that expresses reality as it is seen from beyond that smoky mirror of spin and deception, with a style and candor that cuts deep, separating, as it were, the bone from the marrow. And here at Feet to Fire, we experience the audio edition with the powerful, poetic delivery of his written message, with a style that you will love or hate, depending upon your desire to be alive and awakened to the light of truth, or remain asleep in the darkness of delusion. Let's take a trip across the pond and this week's comments from Les Visible.
Haru! Weeks slide by, and the weekend comes around so quickly, and then it's another radio broadcast, and also time for me to say, welcome! Welcome to Dog Poet Transmitting and another foray into some kind of space on the saucer pod, which gleams in its ruby miniature upon my desktop here, until I walk somewhere into an empty meadow where I toss it to the side. It begins to spin and falls slowly to the ground while it expands to its full size. The door opens and turns into a set of stairs, and I'm up and in, and the doors close behind me. I seat myself at the control panel and enter into the mind-meld experience with the ship, which is a lot like what happens between one of the Na'vi in the film Avatar and their horse-like creatures and pterodactyl-like flying mounts, where they take the ends of their hair and connect it with the ends of the manes of their mounts, and then it turns into one of those lock-and-load kind of situations. Of course, that is what masters and gurus do with those they take on as students, and that is also what the dark side does when they take on or appropriate the unwitting or morally compromised as physical vehicles to exercise their will on the manifest plane. All of us are at one stage or another on the way in either direction. Of course, I won't venture to state that there is not some sort of wide and endless middle ground that leads forever and ever nowhere unless it's already there and always somewhere, or somehow you carry it with you everywhere, and it is what it is at all times and in all places, but I don't know, so I won't say, or venture, as I think it was put, as far as the other two go. Well, those different and opposite directions, well, I'm a little more familiar with that, either by experience or via observation. I could also say, by looking in on my inner world and looking out on the greater extended world. Anyway, did I say welcome, welcome? I'm pretty sure I did. Wasn't that long ago, after all. I'm here in the jungle, or rather hovering above the jungle, mountains behind me and lava fields before me and a wide and restless ocean all around me if I should rise up high enough to be able to see it instead of hovering over treetops as I am presently doing. I feel like one of those drones that hangs around outside someone's window like a dragonfly or a hummingbird. I'm not doing anything like that. It's just some imagery of speech. I've been thinking a lot about these things that get between us and the celestial realm and those things that attach us to the conditions here. It can be complex or seem that way when you are in the middle of it. From the outside, it is not all that complex, but how do you get outside? You drop all these things that get between us and the celestial realm, and you detach from the conditions here that trap us in recurring endless cycles of mind-numbing repetition that we mistake for excitement because we are insulated from all the many other times we were here repeating the same things. The world is a glue board bramble. You got to watch your step. It may not happen all at once, and often does not, but in most cases, eventually it takes you to a place where only death can cut you loose, which is what I believe is death's job. Most people don't get this, and this is why death is such a dramatic fear zone for most people. Of course, a lot of people have good reason to fear death, because death is like a tour guide, and depending on which package you bought in on that depends which tour you go on. So the tour guide can be something so ethereally beautiful that you can't express the effect of it on this plane of being. Or, well, it can be of the genre of those 50-foot-tall Tibetan demons from the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and something more terrifying than can be expressed in the language of this plane. What makes the process of extraction so terrifying is the degree of one's attachment and the comprehensive catalog of one's behavior as it gets interpreted by whoever gets the complete volume from the recording angel. You remember the quote, "As above, so below"? What that means is there is a hierarchy in the manifest and a hierarchy in the invisible, and that means, well, let's do it with an example. Let's imagine the Sam Rayburn Building, which I think is the name of the place where all the members of Congress, specifically the House of Representatives, have their offices, or say the Senate office building. As you know, there are not only those self-important flacks who are a wholly owned property of the Israeli bankers, but there are many, many other people who serve the day-to-day needs of the political industry. There's every level of paper pusher, and then there are all those ancillary functionaries that handle this or that. It's the same thing in the invisible. The major difference is that down here, all the people in the manifest, those people, work for the devil. And in the invisible, they work for the ineffable. This is not to say that everyone in the invisible works for the divine, because that is not true. Some of the nastiest customers operating down here are based in the invisible. Of course, not everyone down here works for the devil, but you can be pretty sure that those mentioned are deeply affiliated in that respect. When you leave this plane of being, you move in a further direction relative to the direction you were already moving in. You don't go to heaven unless you're already in heaven. All of that gets realized here. Sure. Okay. There's a lot more to it than that. In attempting to diagram what goes on between here and there on this Mobius strip of half-seen, half-unseen is just not describable except for the seen part of it. Now, those of you who have an interest in what lies beyond should maybe look into the early theosophical writers, as some of them, like Leadbeater and others, were fairly tuned in. Something was happening during the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century, say 20 years on either end, where all kinds of articulate and aware people showed up, and then materialism swept it all away. Supposedly, we are in a similar period now, but I've yet to see much of it in operation. I imagine it's percolating in the shrubbery and underbrush and being kept out of sight by those who are masquerading as it, but fall so miserably short. Well, it's not like we have to do anything. It'll all be taken care of. It's one thing to arrive here and not know what's going on. That happens to most of us. It's another thing to lack curiosity beyond the report of the senses and to behave as if you were a beast with human capacity, meaning you can open refrigerator doors and find your way in and out of all kinds of rooms where all kinds of things are going on, but all those other rooms go, the other rooms besides those, go unexplored, and this is much like that term, an unexamined life. We're unlikely to have the time or motivation to explore our own being if our attention is always fixed on stuff. We do not have to suffer as we do. We suffer because of stuff. Stuff comes between us and those we should love. Stuff comes between us and ourselves. Stuff populates and fills our world, and it drives our appetites for more and more stuff until we become just stuff. And those in our lives have the same relationship to us that stuff has. Stuff smothers us. It is stuff and the love of stuff that conceals from us the bright and eternal light of the living God. Religion is stuff, and it conceals the light of the living God. Where does this living God live? It lives within us. It does not live in the sky apart from us, although it is in everything and everywhere. It is the very force that animates us, and there would be no life in our bodies were it not made alive by the living God. We think and feel because of the living, indwelling God. When I met the man on the beach, one of the things he said to me was that God is sleeping, and this is his dream. I said to him, "But he's going to wake up, right?" He said, "I don't know." That made me sad for a moment. I don't know why. But he kept saying, "I don't know." It wasn't too long before I was saying, "I don't know, too." And the thing is that I really, fundamentally, understood in the most intense, visceral sense that I did not know. And I kept saying it. It felt so good. And I felt so free. Free like I had not been before, but that was just a taste of things to come. I was arrested at some point shortly after. I don't remember exactly what for, but some BS thing. And while I was in lockup, my face kept doing funny things. I found myself hissing through my nose like the man on the beach. It was half cat and half serpent-like. I was having the same facial changes that I observed in the man on the beach. I was released shortly after in one of those strange, made-no-sense ways, and I wound up hitchhiking back to Washington, D.C. At that time, John Hall was a good friend of mine, and he came up to me in the park and said he had some great acid, and he and some musicians wanted to go out to this fellow's house in Virginia, in the Virginia woods, to trip and play music. So I went with them, and I remember that I was sitting there, and this feeling started coming over me. Even though I was tripping, it was unlike anything I'd ever experienced before. I thought I was being possessed at first. John was playing these licks that were repeating, and the music seemed to trigger this feeling in me. It was so strong, well, I had no choice. I just decided to go with it, trusting in the Almighty. Suddenly, everything and everyone I had been was sucked out of me. I was no longer me or anyone, for that matter. I was nothing. Yet I was filled with power. Things began to happen in the room that freaked everyone else out, so I left and went outside. And there on the lawn in front of me were five golden serpents, holographic cobras, coiled, but their heads and part of their body was raised about 3 feet off the ground. They were all facing me. And to the left was a row of green electric cats in profile. Just a green, almost cartoon-like outline of a cat with a big number 9 in the body. I forget how many cats there were. What I do remember is when I walked, the ground beneath my feet shook, trembled, and I went to walk into the forest, which was nearby, and was alive with all kinds of creatures, but I was stopped from going further. I went back inside and upstairs to the bathroom and looked at myself in the mirror, and I saw my face change from one appearance to another. It was like all my lifetimes coming back, going back to ancient Egypt and maybe before, other places, many faces. The man on the beach had activated my kundalini from thousands of miles away. I've never understood what any of it meant, but for several years following it, I had supernatural powers. I was unaffected by the cold or much of anything else, and well, as happens, I guess, some years later, I got lost. Got lost for a long time. You know, in and out, kind of. And it took a while to happen, and it took some time to come back for me to come back out of it, as it seems I am now. I still don't know what any of it means. And a few years ago, I was in Italy, where I had another powerful kundalini experience. I remember walking toward the gate of the property, and Lady Nature came walking toward me. She suddenly appeared. And she had flowing auburn hair and was wearing an iridescent green dress. She had flowers in her hair. We walked into the house, and she sat beside me on the couch, and for an hour or two I was in this transcendent space. We laughed and spoke to a multitude of people at far reaches as if we were on the radio, and it was amazing. I was in a state of such complete synchronicity with her. I was mystically and magically in love in a way as I had never been before. I was complete in a way I never imagined that someone could be. And then she had to leave. I had thought she would be with me forever from then on, but she said she had something else she had to attend to and that she would return. She has not so far. I won't go into what she said to me except that I have been involved in a relationship with her for many lifetimes and that this was the last of them. So much happened in this six-week period that I could talk for hours about what happened then. It turned out to be the end of my relationship with Suzanne. It was just too strange for her. And now I'm here and I have no idea what any of it means. I'm just waiting like I was told to do. Why am I talking about this? I'm sure I've said some of these things before. I'm talking about to illustrate that there is so much more to life than a world of stuff. The garbage of material culture is nothing compared to what is possible for us. I live for these kind of things that happen to me. Nothing that is going on around me has any value or meaning except for the human side of it. And the human side of it is so much more than most of us imagine. These experiences come at a price, and I can say that it has cost me dearly. It has cost me everything else, but what is everything else after all? It's just stuff and tedious hours of all the emptiness created by stuff. I don't know what waits for me, but I know it's not simply more stuff. I'll be out of funds in some months, as far as what the present tells me, but what I take from that is that events as yet unknown will intrude, and I could be anywhere in times to come, and it is not something I should concern myself with. I should only concern myself with the moment and the ongoing pursuit of the ineffable. Well, my friends, time and space constraints tell me we have come to the end of another broadcast, and I'll see you next week if there is one. Until we meet again, celebrate the indwelling and seek the ineffable in all things. These are remarkable times filled with potential, and just because it looks gray and threatening and filled with stuff means nothing, because you can be filled with something else, are indeed already filled with something else. It simply needs to be recognized. And what else is there? Just stuff and people who chase stuff, and all of the torments that materialism can bring, which promises everything and delivers nothing. That's it. Hare Krishna. Hail Lord Jesus Christ. Greetings, my good friend, Lord Ganesh. Om Amitabha. Much love, Lady Nature. Alhamdulillah. Carry on, Baha'u'llah. Aloha and Aru.
He's long and tall and slender, and he's got a walking stick. You'll be changed forever if you get hit by it. He's coming for the Zionists and all their bankers too. And if you don't behave yourself, he's coming after you. There's no way to stop him. He can't be bribed or bought. And he's sweeter than the air in spring, and meaner than you thought. You're the deer inside his headlights, if you're the kind that hunts by night. And no one stays anonymous when it gets you in his sights. Mr. Apocalypse is coming, oh yeah. He's rising into view just like the sun. He's bringing living truth, he's bringing freedom. And a wake-up call designed for everyone. He's here. Mr. Apocalypse is here.
Feet to Fire is a production of IPS Media Works on the OnSIC Radio Network of Stations.